comes from Matthew 7, 7. Ask and keep asking, and you will receive. Seek and keep seeking, and you will find. Knock and keep knocking, and the door will be opened to you. From John 10, 10. I came that you might have life and have it to the full. And from John 15, 7 through 12. If you live on in me, and my words live on in you, ask whatever you want, and it will be done for you. My Abba will be glorified if you bear much fruit, and thus prove to be my disciples. As my Abba has loved me, so I have loved you. Live on in my love. And if you live on in my love, if you keep my commandments, just as I live on in Abba God's love and have kept God's commandments, I tell you all this so that my joy may be yours and your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, love one another as I have loved you. Here ends the reading for this day. Thanks be to God. You want it. You want it bad. Sometimes so much it hurts. You can taste it. You feel like you would do anything to get it. Go further than they'd suspect. Twist your soul and crush what's in your way. Then you get it, and something happens. You become the object of your desire, and it feels incredible. This is an advertisement for perfume in a Macy's window. I like to grocery shop on Tuesdays, and every other week for months, I would enter the store and make a beeline to the Bath & Body section of the store. There was a perfume for sale that I liked, and I would spritz myself with the sample bottle before continuing on with my shopping. I actually could have afforded to purchase the bottle, but I knew that I didn't really need it, I only wanted it. So for Christmas, that very perfume was gifted to me by my wife. And unlike the Macy's window advertisement, I would not do anything to get it, nor twist my soul, nor crush what's in my way. And I actually felt much happier receiving it as a thoughtful gift from someone else than I would have if I had purchased it for myself. In the 1920s, it became clear that middle-class Americans were in danger of becoming satisfied. All of their needs were being met. Access to food, clothing, and shelter was becoming more accessible. Soon, the middle class might realize that they could finally have more rest and be happy and be satisfied. This horrified industrialist Walter Henderson Grimes, and he cautioned that, quote, unless we have a greater outlet for our goods, as manufacturing efficiency increases, there will be larger groups with too much leisure. Industrial relations counselor E.S. Codrick called for what he dubbed the new economic gospel of consumption. At first, workers did not seem to desire the new goods and services as much as they had food and clothing and shelter. So more sectors of society got involved to expand the gospel of consumption. The word gospel in the dictionary is defined like this: the message concerning Christ, the kingdom of God, and salvation. Or the gospel is, under this definition, a message or teachings of a religious teacher. And finally, something accepted or promoted as truth, or as a guiding principle or doctrine. Investors, marketing experts, advertisers, and business leaders got involved with spreading this new type of gospel or promoted guiding principle. The new advertising industry was born, and after World War II, Americans began to spend money on things they do not need, which is supposedly good for the economy. We are currently about 73 years into this gospel of consumption way of life. And right now there is one automobile for every 1.7 people in the United States. In China, there is one automobile for every 600 people, but we are trying to spread the global free market economy throughout the world so that all other countries can have one automobile for every 1.7 people too. However, there's not enough steel or petroleum or rubber or clean air to support all of these desires. According to the gospel of Jesus and many other religious teachers, grasping for more and more is not the road to happiness. Did Jesus want us to be happy? He said this, "I have come that you might have life, and that abundantly. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and your joy may be full." That sounds like happiness to me. In more secular spheres, philosophers from Aristotle to Jefferson have assumed that the pursuit of happiness is a noble aspiration in life. We remember these famous words from the Declaration of Independence that was signed on the 4th of July, 1776. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, people, are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and what? The pursuit of happiness." This summer, we are learning that true happiness is one of those human qualities that grows only in the sweet soil of time. Wayne Muller, who wrote the book that we're doing in our book study this summer, he told a story about planting bulbs in his yard. He was a novice gardener at the time, and he did not yet know about perennials. So he was super excited to learn that you could plant a bulb in the ground and that it would come up again year after year. He planted tulip bulbs around a water fountain in his front yard, and he couldn't wait until springtime to see those tulips arise. And then April came, and he saw the little leaves poking through the ground, and he was so excited. But then 2 days later, they had been eaten down to just stubs, the little leaves. The following 2 years, the exact same thing happened again and again. He never saw the tulips. They kept getting eaten down by jackrabbits. For the first 3 years, he accepted that these jackrabbits eating the tulips was a little gift that he was giving to them. But in the fourth year, he decided to build a small 10-inch fence around the birdbath, so the jackrabbits could eat the grasses and the weeds, but they couldn't quite get to the emerging tulip plants. And after 2 years, This is one of those times when you didn't print a whole page of your sermon. So let's do it from memory. He put the fence down, and then he finally saw the reds and the purples of the tulips. And he learned that sometimes you have to make boundaries around something in order for something to be able to grow and emerge. We remember there are so many precepts in the Bibles about the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not. There are so many things about the Jewish Sabbath. There's like 29 certain boundaries that you have to set upon yourself. And they're all things that are prohibitions, restrictions on how you're supposed to live. But Wayne says, what if these are like putting a little fence around your tulips so that you're keeping certain things out so that other things are finally allowed to emerge and they don't get trampled over or eaten up? There's a story that I want to tell, and this is another story about boundaries and resting. And it's a story about a piece of land, a field. And when I tell this story, I want you to imagine yourself as the land. So be the land when you hear this story. There was a nun named Sister Gilchrist, and she was in the Abbey of Mississippi. And one of her responsibilities as being a nun was to help cook the food. And one of the things she loved to do is to walk out on all the land that was part of this abbey, and she would pick little herbs that were growing in the field, and she would add them to the stew or to whatever she was cooking, and it would add so much flavor to the food that everyone got to eat and participate in. Well, the land that was part of the abbey also had a lot of cattle on it. And for many years, the cattle were allowed to graze the entire field, all of the land. One year, the sisters decided that they were interested in permaculture. And so they brought in an expert who came and taught them to do something a little bit different. The expert said, instead of having the cattle graze over the entirety of all of the land that you own, section off the land. And for a while, only allow the cattle to graze fully on this part of the land. They are thus fertilizing that entire portion. And then, after a time, move that section, that pin, to another part of your land. And so the cattle are going to graze fully on that section, while the other section now is able to rest, and the cattle are not able to walk upon it. Well, after 2 years of this new grazing method, Sister Gilchrist went out early one spring to check on the growth of her precious herbs that she liked to pick. And to her astonishment, she found that not only the few herbs that she had been picking for years were there, all of a sudden, about a dozen new ones had miraculously appeared, apparently out of nowhere. There were several new grasses that had germinated in the land as well. And these grasses were so nutritious that when the cows ate it, they got all their nutrients. The sisters didn't have to supplement the cow's diet with corn anymore. And the nutritious grasses were able to sustain the cows much better. Where had all of this come from? Where did these new herbs and grasses come from? They appeared within the earth, seeds that had always been there. They had always been trodden underfoot by the cattle, so they had never had an opportunity to grow into their fullness. So when the land and the seeds were given a Sabbath, they could then grow in their own time and reveal wonders and sustainability. So what was it like for you to imagine yourself as that field and as that land? Does it ever feel like parts of your life and creativity are being trodden underfoot with relentless activity? What might happen if parts of your day or your week or your year were sectioned off so that you can lie fallow and practice Sabbath? Wisdom tells us that if this happens, new growth will emerge. Sabbath is a time to stop, to refrain from being seduced by our desires, to stop working, stop making money, stop spending money, to see what you have and do you really need more than this. Instead of buying that new coffee maker, make coffee in the old one and do what they do in those catalog pictures that get mailed to your house. Drink that coffee while resting, but you don't have to pay for the new coffee maker. This is what they're selling in the picture, people who have stopped. You can't buy stopped, you just have to stop. There are practices in the chapters that we've been reading on this book study, and this one stood out to me. Imagine if you would do this yourself. Take an hour to visit your favorite store, one where you particularly enjoy shopping. Perhaps they have many beautiful things that you love or things that you would like to have if you could afford them. But today, resolve to enter the store and spend one full hour shopping, knowing that you are not going to spend a single penny. Look at the merchandise. Let yourself feel the tug of buying. Listen to those voices that speak to you. Buy me. You need me. Take me home with you. You'd be so happy if you had me. Be aware of any struggles or discomforts that arise. Be aware of any spaciousness that may arise as you let each item go, walking away free of the impulse to acquire it, at least for today. What do you notice about your mood, your sense of sufficiency as you leave the store? I would challenge all of us to maybe think about practicing this practice this week. Our kiddos, we heard earlier, told us what happiness was for them. We watched that little video of Charlie Brown that was part of the original musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And here we have children expressing simple things that can make children happy. We heard about two types of ice creams. Someone thought they heard 49. That's probably even more. Knowing a secret, climbing a tree, catching a firefly. So I wanted to allow just a little bit of time for us to reflect upon and speak aloud what happiness can be for each of us today. So I'll start, and I hope that someone else will say something too. Happiness is listening to the cicadas during an Oklahoma summer evening. May it be so. Amen. Let us